Well, we've had a change of vets today and Cheryl's not here, but we're joined by the wonderful Dr. Kimberly Earle for Pet Chat on 2NURFM. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Great to see you. Thanks for taking one for the team.
No worries.
Yes. So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, hopefully we'll get lots of phone calls. I thought we probably should talk a little bit about avian influenza and then maybe a little bit about osteoarthritis. We'll just see how much time we have.
Just quickly, I'm going to give you an update on Cheryl's dogs. So last week she was saying that she was worried that one of them had swallowed a pin, had like a little brooch, had a crocheted carrot on it with stuffing, and the pin was open. Yeah. And so she was really concerned that, you know, one of the dogs may have swallowed it. She didn't see the dogs do it, but the pin was missing.
Oh, scary.
So, yeah, so still everything's okay. She said she's been checking the poo and the pin hasn't turned up yet, and it's not the best job to check the poo, but obviously nobody wants to check poo, but at least the dogs are okay at this stage. So
it's a whole week down the track, so hopefully that means that they're not in any trouble.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Well, I don't think she had them x-rayed, and they're not showing any symptoms, so maybe the pin will turn up, fingers crossed. Hi, Shelley. Thanks for holding.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Now, you've got a chihuahua that's weeing inside the house.
Yes.
So tell us a little about your dog. Yeah, so how old is your dog?
He'll be 7 in December.
Okay. And is this a new problem or is this something he's been doing for the last 7 years?
It is a new problem.
Okay.
Because my daughter moved back home and she has a ragdoll cat.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I think it's very unusual, the cat did a wee in the corner on the carpet.
Yep.
So then my little chihuahua runs in there and he goes, oh, and he cocks his leg.
Yep, yep.
Then she did one on the rug.
Yep.
Same thing. And now it's set up this pattern with him.
Yeah.
That whenever he goes in the front of the house, he'll cock his leg on anything.
Now he's cocking, on anything,
He's cocking it everywhere. And then the other thing that the little pussycat does, if you leave a laundry basket with nothing in it, or a bucket or a bowl, even the bathtub, anything like that, she will jump in there and do a wee.
Yeah.
So then he smells that and he cocks his leg. So it just keeps on going on and on.
Yeah, so you've got two issues here. One, you have you said it was a ragdoll cat?
Ragdoll.
Yeah. So when you have a really stressed ragdoll cat, okay, your daughter ideally would seek some help for the cat as well before this turns into, a cystitis where we've got bloody urine and things like that, because that's not normal behaviors for a cat. But it's very common for cats to be stressed when they move to a new location. And ragdoll cats in particular are highly prone to stress. They're ragdolls. They do the reason they have their name is because when they're stressed, a lot of them sort of just freeze and they just sort of become floppy and they just like almost play dead. But they are a cat breed that is really, really prone to stress and anxiety related disorders, and urinary tract issues can be really serious. Now, you're referring to her as a she, which means she's a lot less likely to get into problems where she gets a blocked urethra, which becomes life-threatening in a matter of hours. But she will get herself more and more worked up. So there'll be lots of things that we can do and strategies we can put in place to try to help her as she's adjusting to the new location as well. Okay. And I'm sure she's not thrilled about having the dog around either.
Does she?
Okay.
Oh, they absolutely love each other.
Okay. Oh, well, that's good at least, yeah.
Yeah, they do.
And then so with your little dog, so I agree that he's probably being triggered by the fact that there's urine smell around and he's was there first. Now, can you tell me, is your little boy, is he castrated, de-sexed?
Yes.
He is. Great. Okay, excellent. So it's still worthwhile having him checked for urinary tract infection. It's much more rare in males than it is in females, but it does happen. So that's the first thing. It's relatively easy to do. Quite often, depending on your vet, you may even be able to just drop in a urine sample. If he had something wrong, they would need to see him before they could prescribe anything. But a lot of times you can drop in a urine sample and say, just want to check, make sure there's no problem here because we're having some behavioral issues. Yeah. So lots of vets will do that. And then we need to go back to treating him like a puppy for a little while. So that's going to be, probably crate training or having him on a leash so he doesn't get free rein to run around the house and lift his leg on things. He needs to be reminded that that's not appropriate toileting behavior.
Yeah.
And we also need to make sure that we're using a really good and lots of a pet odor remover, because you just your regular carpet cleaners or soap and water is not going to get the proteins, the enzymes and the pheromones out of the carpets or the floorboards or whatever.
Well,
even like hard counter surfaces, if he's lifting his leg on the counter, we need to be using a pet odor remover so that we're getting rid of that.
He is. He'll do it anyway. But my daughter actually ripped up all the carpet after that.
Yeah, okay.
So now we just have bare floorboards.
Floorboards,
but I actually live out the back of the house with him.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't do it out the back. He only does that in the front. So I pick him up. Whenever I go in the front now, I pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
But I can take him out the front to go to the toilet.
Yep.
And then if he darts into the house, he'll still cock his leg.
When
you go for a walk, he'll do it 10 times.
Like marking his territory.
Yeah, and it is. There's a degree of territory marking there. So, I would restrict his access, and like he might be the dog that you might just have to keep him on a leash when you're in that part of the house, because he's much less likely. It doesn't prevent him from doing it, but he's much less likely to do it if he's, close on your heel. And you're going to notice it when he pauses, even when he sniffs. The other thing is that it may be that, sometimes cats can be quite private about their toileting. So quite often, they might just leave a little bit behind and you don't necessarily know about it. So, anywhere he goes, make sure that we're, following up with a really good pet odor. And even if he's sort of interested in a particular area, that's an area where it might be worthwhile using some pet odor remover or pet urine remover. There's lots of different brands on the market, but you want one that is going to take an enzymatic action to it, so that we pick up those proteins and the pheromones that are there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Get him checked out just on the off chance. See if we can help, your daughter's cat as well, because that will hopefully improve the situation as a general rule. And then it might take 3 months, 3 or 4 months for you to just, go back to puppyhood and just like, you know what, buddy, if you're not going to play by the rules, you're going to have your privileges rescinded and you get to be, treated like a puppy, That's what I say to my daughter. If you're going to act like a four-year-old, I'm going to treat you like a four-year-old. I don't actually, but...
I pick him up at the door.
I don't ever let him
down on the ground now because it's just not worth it, because he'll just cock his leg on anything.
On anything,
anything that's around, he will cock his leg on that. And the poor little kitty cat, like, she has moved about 4 times.
Yeah.
And that's obviously why.
Yeah, she's probably really stressed and struggling just to find her, her safe space and to just really settle in. And that's understandable for a cat, so.
Okay. I thought it was a bit unusual for the little kitty cat to do that, because she's still doing it. She's been here 2 years now.
Yeah.
She's still doing it.
A long time, yeah. So definitely worthwhile getting her checked out, because there would be things that we can do, sometimes to help her out and to, some of these cats will require some pharmaceutical help, but not all of them.
Okay.
But it's definitely worthwhile having her checked out. Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Shelley. Good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a long time. Yeah. But, I think we want to make sure that the dog isn't having the opportunity to practice, but we also want to make sure that he's not being triggered, as much as possible, as much as we can control that.
Yeah.
Rescinding some privileges for a little while until he sort of relearns that. And he's obviously, it sounds like he's definitely gotten in the habit of doing that. So, yeah.
You were talking about osteoarthritis. What's happening there?
Well, you were asking what we've been seeing a lot of in clinic, and we have been doing a lot of orthopedic surgeries of late. And we do a lot of the number one that we do is a cruciate ligament repair in a dog's back leg in their knee. Okay. And one of the reasons that we're doing a lot of these is because we are starting to identify, or in the vet world, we've really started to identify how quickly osteoarthritis sets in once a dog has had a cruciate ligament injury. And in the past, I think we often would sit on these and we would sort of go, oh, the dog is lame. Maybe the knee's not unstable. It might have a partial, you can sort of have a complete tear of that ligament, or you can have a partial tear of the ligament. And the partial tears are painful for the dog and they're creating a lot of inflammation, but the joint is not unstable. So the dogs will still walk on them, but they tend to walk with a limp. And there's been some much more recent research that shows how rapidly permanent osteoarthritic changes happen in the knee. And so our Dr. Perrin, who's our orthopedic surgeon, she's recently been to a course. It's Australian vets all over Australia go to these courses. And they were really showing, highlighting how quickly the changes will happen in the knee. So if your dog is running on the beach and they pull up lame in the back leg, and they may have done a cruciate, what we call a cruciate ligament tear, or this is an ACL tear. It's the right. same as what, you know, footballers, human footballers tear all the time. In dogs, we call them a CCL, a cranial cruciate ligament, instead of an anterior cruciate ligament. But it's the same ligament. And what happens then, if you get a partial tear, so you literally have... on one half of the ligament, it's flapping. The two sides are torn and they're sort of flapping around in the joint.
Sounds painful.
It does. And it creates a lot of inflammation. It creates, the body tries to sort of get rid of those inflammatory mediators. So it pumps extra fluid in. So you get the joint is sort of more full of fluid and it's edema and things like that. And it causes changes to, you can tear the meniscus as well, which is a common thing that humans do as well. And so what they've actually shown by doing arthroscopy and things in the knees of dogs is that within 10 to 12 weeks, the amount of permanent arthritic change that happens in that knee is pretty phenomenal. And by a year after, so that's, 12 months after, the changes in the knee are so much that you can, your dog can, they still walk on them because that's what they do. They're stoic. They still walk on them. But the changes are so profound that in a human, they'd be looking at total knee replacements. Now, we don't do total knee replacements in veterinary medicine very often. We do total hip replacements and a few other things, but total knees don't really happen. But what I guess the message we're trying to get through is that we actually believe that the welfare of the dog is going to be maximized if we can get in and do a surgical repair, even on those dogs where they only have a partial cruciate ligament tear. And a partial tear, it's only a matter of time in most cases before they let go and they're a fully unstable joint. But osteoarthritic change, when the body has that chronic level of inflammation in the joint, it lays down new bone. It's trying to stabilize the joint and it sort of goes, oh, well, if I lay a bit of new bone down here, maybe that will help to, sort of make this more stable. But you can't really get rid of that bone. It's not like we can sort of go in there and shave it back and remodel it. You lose cartilage and you get this new bone that's in the wrong spot. And so you end up with joints that are, they have reduced motion because the bones, that new bone is hitting when they try to bend the knee. Or they end up with a bone-on-bone surface instead of the cartilage surface is, gets eroded. And so those are changes that are permanent. And although we can support them, there's lots of things that we can do to support them. There's nothing we can do to sort of reverse that. So anything we can do that's going to stabilize that joint and reduce that inflammation, we clean out the joint, we stabilize it, that's going to, mean that your dog has the best opportunity to have as little pain and little change in that joint as possible. I'll never say that you can prevent change 100%, but we certainly know that getting in and doing a surgical repair on those, particularly the acute ones, if you've got a 10-year-old dog and he's been hobbling around on that leg for a long time, then, you're probably already dealing with a lot of change. But, for the ones that are acutely lame, we definitely think that the best thing for the dog is to get them in sooner rather than later, have them assessed with x-rays, and then wherever possible, get in and get surgery done. And there's lots of vets around who, are able to do surgery on these knees. I guess these days we know that cranial cruciate ligament disease in dogs is largely considered a degenerative problem. So the sad reality of it is if your dog does one knee, they're likely to do the other knee at some point. It's not just a trauma-related, trauma-related thing. And it has a lot to do with conformation, how the dog is built and the angles of their legs and their knees and things like that. But yeah, I guess the message is for your dog's long-term outcome and quality of life, get in, see your vet early. And if your vet doesn't recommend surgery early, then ask them about it, because we absolutely know that these dogs will have a better outcome if we can stabilize that joint and repair it earlier rather than later.
Okay, good advice. We're going to look at our pets of the week. We're going to start with Pepper. And we've had Pepper before. I'm sure Pepper was on here at maybe about 6 months ago.
Okay, yeah. I haven't met Pepper before, but anyway, she's lovely. Pepper's a lovely, a spicy young lady with a cheeky streak. She's a 2-year-old bull terrier mix, nice brindle-coloured looking dog. Loves nothing more than a wrestle with her humans and a close snuggle. She's got epic zoomies as she likes to bounce around the room and tear up the hallway. She loves to play with stuffies and soccer balls and says they're a source of endless entertainment for her, but also for the humans playing and watching all of her shenanigans. She loves to go for a walk, is still developing her on-leash skills, says she's currently interested in dogs when she's on a walk and she'll have a sniff through a fence. So she's probably stopping a fair bit to do that. That's all right. She takes a little bit to warm up to new people, but once she's got your scent and she's become familiar with you, she is going to be your best friend. She is untested on cats and untested with a live dog buddy. Okay, so as in maybe they're not sure how she's going to go in the house with him, but yeah, they've just not tested her. If she likes them on a walk, it's probably not a major drama. She is in foster care in the Newcastle region in the Junction. So, yeah, get in touch if you're interested in adopting her.
Next, we've got beautiful cat, Astro.
So Astro's a 7-year-old white and ginger boy. He is a little bit of an older fella. He's a lovely, gentle boy. He's settled and calmer than most because of his age. But, I mean, 7 for cats, that's middle age. That's not old. It says he has the best purr, and he turns it on as soon as he gets a pat or he gets to sit in your lap. He loves to have attention and is happy to be held and enjoys going to the vet even. Oh, that's interesting. showing love and giving endless purrs whilst there. He's pretty chill and loves his human mum. Like most cats that have been in care, he's a little bit cautious initially and he takes a moment to get comfortable with change. But once he's there, he is confident and he will come to you. Says if you're looking for a calm cat who will love you as much as you love him, then he might be your boy. Hasn't been tested with young children, but he's happy with older children, teenagers who will let him sit on their lap. And he would be suitable as an only pet. When it comes to other cats and dogs, he has had little interaction, so he's a bit untested. So, but they don't think that he seems to mind them. So he's a lovely boy. So if somebody's looking for an older cat and, you know, not wanting to deal with the kitten phase, that might be a good option.
Yeah. So you've got Astro and Pepper this week, and if you'd like to check them out, head to our website, 2NURFM.com.au. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM 103.7, and we're talking about avian influenza today. Mm-hmm. You want to tell us a bit more?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm sure people have heard in the news that we've had numerous detections now of H5N1 avian influenza. Australia has been really protected from this for a long time, and the rest of the world has been dealing with it, and it's here. And we've known it's coming. We've been preparing as a nation, you know, people who are in those sort of fields, we've been preparing for it. We've been expecting it to come. I think we're up to about 27 cases now. Most of them are in Western Australia and South Australia. But I think over the last few days or this week, now we're really starting to see a few endemic birds, so native Australian birds, rather than our pelagic species that are the ones that, you know, they travel the world, but they don't really sort of spend a lot of time on our shores. Those were all the first cases were in those pelagic seabirds, and now we're starting to see them in endemic species. And this is really going to be something that I think as a nation we're going to have to be prepared for, and it's not going to go away. We are still going to be dealing with it in a commercial sense. So if it gets into our commercial poultry flock, they are still going to be using a sort of a stamping out method of trying to control it. But in our wildlife and other animals, we're not going to get rid of this. It's going to be here to stay, and we're going to have to deal with it. And I guess the public service announcement is that this is a serious disease. It's mostly a serious disease of birds, but it can affect other species, and marine mammals tend to be the most commonly ones affected. In the United States, they have been getting cases in dairy cows and cats, but at this stage, we don't seem to have the same genome, even though we have the same, it's the same H5N1, but the genomes are still really different. Avian influenza viruses, there's so many of them, and they're all very different. But as a general rule, this clade, this H5N1, is the one that's been causing a lot of problems around the world.
Can humans pass it on?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So humans can get it. It's a low, it's the World Health Organization lists it as a low risk disease for humans. The cases that have, you know, you can get it from, but you're going to usually get it from birds. Not, there's no human to human transfer that's happened yet. Okay. Everybody's holding their breath for the next, you know, pandemic, but yeah, but hopefully that won't happen. But we still want people to be aware and aware of what the official sort of response is meant to be. And so everybody, you know, should be thinking, if you're walking at the beach and you see dead birds, we don't want to be interacting with them. So the mantra that they're saying is avoid, record, report. Avoid contact, direct contact with humans or your pets. So if you've got your dog down at the beach, keep them away from dead birds. Record it. And ideally, if you take a picture of it, if you can, you know, log a GPS number, like, you know, find a GPS coordinates for it. Yep. That sort of thing. And then report it to the Emergency Animal Disease Hotline. And that's a number that I'd love everybody to have in their phone. It's 1-800-675-888. Because, you know, if you see maybe a one-off dead bird, you know, we all go to the beach and you see those mutton birds from time to time. You know, they wash up on shore after they've been fatigued. But if we start to see large numbers of birds, we really want to be, you know, there's lots of surveillance. We really want to be recording that. So, you know, put that number in your phone, record and report, you know, dead birds that you see, so that we can get on top of it and that we can, you know, find out where it is. That will take you to a phone triage line, and somebody will answer the phone and they'll ask you questions. And that's why we want, if you can, report it or record it where you're at. Give them the best description possible. If you know a little bit about birds and you can see what kind of a bird it is, you know, otherwise, you know, take a photo. They might give you an option to send it through, that kind of thing. And then just be aware and be understanding that it's going to put some pressure on vet hospitals in terms of what we're able to do. We don't want people to just show up with sick and injured wild birds. Please call ahead to any vet hospitals. Some vet hospitals, unfortunately, have taken the they're not going to see birds, but hopefully that, you know, this isn't going away. So hopefully that's not going to be forever. People are just in a little bit of a, you know, anxious stage about the whole thing.
Worried about transferring it to
other
animals.
We definitely want to be able to do a phone triage. And in our clinic, we will be setting an external triage center up outside of the building, you know, for cases that are highly suspicious. And I guess my other thing is, if you have backyard chickens and if you have a backyard aviaries, please, 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 please consider covering them over so you have, you know, reduce the exposure to your birds from wildlife. So if you can put a roof on it, if you can prevent wild birds getting close, that's ideal.
Yep, wonderful. Okay, good advice. Thank you so much, Kimberly. We'll catch you next week for Pet Chat.
Sounds good. See you then.
Thank you.